Meeting will come to order. We have a large agenda today, so we're going to start right into it and move. We're going to spend our first 15-20 minutes on the first bill, which is the Wildlife Management Area Land Acquisition Funding Request. And we'll start right off with House File 1939. Representative Paulson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Chairman and members, the legislation that is before you today really has Minnesota's heart and soul behind it. It will preserve our wild heritage for future generations. And I think it's important, members, as I know this committee often does, to look ahead and recognize the needs of all future Minnesotans, setting aside unique natural land for the benefit of all. Chairman, 50 years ago, Minnesota became the first state in the country to establish wildlife management areas where hunters and others became concerned about dwindling habitat for fish and game and other wildlife. And now wildlife management areas are actually prevalent throughout the country. Now a citizens group has met recently to plot out the next 50 years after 50 years of previous history of how the wildlife management area program can be expanded and enhanced. And the group that is representing this legislation before you is a coalition of outdoor groups, of fishing groups, hunting organizations, and conservation groups, really a unique and remarkable group that have common ground. They understand and appreciate, as do a lot of Minnesotans, that wildlife management areas contribute a lot to our quality of life here in the state of Minnesota. Wildlife management areas provide habitat for both game and non-game species. They provide recreation for anglers and hunters and those who come to exercise, photograph wildlife, and study nature, and really appreciate Minnesota's beauty. This love of our priceless natural heritage is a unique quality of life issue that Minnesotans appreciate. The Citizens Group evaluated the need for wildlife management areas in all parts of the state, dividing the state into 10 different ecological regions. And they set some wildlife management area acreage goals for each section, with the new acquisitions for this legislation to really be focused in the Minnesota River Prairie region. It is time to act now before time is too late. Rapidly increasing land prices and development pressures have truly increased the price of land, and opportunity is dwindling. And while the committee, the Citizens Committee initially suggested an investment of $22 million a year for each biennium, we're coming before you today with legislation that we think will do much at an appropriation of $10 million per year and will go a long way to renewing the level of commitment that Minnesotans can preserve, the rapidly dwindling southeast bluff lands and deciduous transition habitat for all time. Without that commitment, the land will either be developed or it will go into private ownership, which will often result in restriction of access for the public. So, Mr. Chairman and members, let's not lose a terrific opportunity to protect the land and open it to enjoyment for all Minnesotans. And I want to thank the Citizens Committee for their active role in developing this proposal and the more than two dozen groups that are supporting this legislation. And there are a number of folks who would like to testify, Mr. Chairman, and be with you today.
Thank you very much. Your first testifier.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Lance Ness, and I appear for you today as the chairman of the Citizens Advisory Committee on Wildlife Management Acquisition. This committee was formed out of a survey and discussion during the 2002 Wildlife Roundtable, at which the 50th anniversary of wildlife management areas, commonly called WMAs, was discussed and celebrated. That led to the question, what should be done for the next 50 years, and more importantly, the next 10 years? The lack of quality of habitat of high and high current pressures being put upon the available habitat and increasing future pressures and demand upon Minnesota's habitat were topics of major concern. The Department of Natural Resources asked us to form this committee, and the commissioner appointed the citizens. This report was based on a consensus agreement among all the members. Just quickly, I'm going to frame this up because I keep our time short here, Mr. Chairman, but the purpose of wildlife management areas is threefold. Number one is to provide wildlife habitat. Two, to provide wildlife production. And three, to provide wildlife recreation, hunting, fishing, and trapping opportunities for the public. In addition, wildlife management areas provide habitat and production for a multitude of non-game species, flood control, water storage and filtration, sediment and erosion filters, which are enormous environmental benefits, but are not the sole purposes for which wildlife management areas were created. Now the task falls to us to continue this highly successful program. The needs continue to grow along with the demands and the pressures upon existing habitat. The committee recommends a 50-year goal of acquiring 702,200 acres of new wildlife management areas over the next 50 years, nearly equaling the program's current acreage. Population, urbanization pressures, the continuing loss of habitat, escalating land costs, and the growing cost of maintaining land are ever-increasing threats to wildlife and habitat. Because of these factors, the committee recommends a 10-year accelerator program be adopted and supported by the state legislature over the course of the next 5 biennials. The 10-year acceleration and the total 50-year acquisition plan cannot be accomplished without the commitment of the legislature, the governor, and for long-term funding, not only for the acquisition of land, but for the development, operation, and maintenance of that land. The committee also recognizes that WMAs cannot be the sole supply of habitat, but should be part of an integrated plan for wildlife conservation that must include public, private, nonprofit partnerships and cooperation, including the federal government. Today, I just have some friends with us here, the examples of some of the wildlife area beneficiaries. I have, of course, our national symbol, the bald eagle, with us. Over here, we have a pheasant and a meadowlark, and I was told by the DNR the meadowlark is over 100 years old. It was mounted over 100 years ago, and that's older than anyone in this room. And then we have over here, we have a redhead duck, I believe, and a merganser, I think, on that side. I think I've identified them all. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll conclude my report statement here. We do have some handouts for you. There's a 3-page bulletin point, which we will be referring to. And there's also a handout, a color two-sided handout that you should have in your packets also, describing the high points of wildlife management areas. And just one more brief, wildlife management areas were first created in Minnesota in 1951, and since then they've spread out throughout the entire state, throughout the entire country, and other states have adopted this program. Minnesota was a leader in that program, and we'd like the committee to think we're the leader again today. And I'll conclude my statements there, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you very much. We now have a quorum, so I'll move that House File 1939 be presented for a presentation and the or consideration for the bonding bill. Next testifier.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Landwehr. I'm the Assistant State Conservation Director for the Nature Conservancy in Minnesota. And while I do spend a substantial amount of time on WMAs in the fall, I'm here to talk to you about some of the other values besides hunting and game populations. The Nature Conservancy was a member of the Citizens Advisory Committee that put the report together that Mr. Ness just discussed, and we support the recommendations of that committee. We also believe that the bill before you is our highest legislative priority for this session for a number of reasons. First off, WMAs are not just public hunting grounds. WMAs in Minnesota contain tens of thousands of acres of native prairie and other native habitats that are important for the mission of the Nature Conservancy. They're home to a number of rare and endangered species like prairie bush clover, Blanding's turtles, upland plovers, eastern meadowlarks like we have before us. And they serve as essential core areas for critical habitats for many of these species. And without these core areas, the remaining areas will be just too small to support these ecosystems and these species. In most cases, hunting is 100% compatible with these, with conservation of these species. Second, WMAs provide many public benefits beyond public hunting and wildlife management. Wetlands and grasslands that are restored or preserved on WMAs provide keep flood abatement. Because the wetlands hold the water in the spring during runoff, they hold waters back, preventing them from rushing to the Minnesota River and causing flooding like that we've seen in many of our heavy snow years, much like this year. Wetlands help purify groundwater and surface water by holding back pollutants as the waters are running over land. And the permanent cover of the nesting cover, in particular the grassy cover around wetlands, helps reduce erosion on what might otherwise be steep and erodible soils. Finally, I believe WMAs help diversify local economies, especially in agricultural areas where the economy is heavily dependent upon agriculture. Bringing in tourism through hunters, anglers, bird watchers helps diversify that economy and provide a source of revenue that's not directly tied to the price of corn and beans. And finally, WMAs provide critical access. Access for hunters is certainly an issue and a growing issue as development continues. But access for bird watchers is also becoming increasingly complicated. At a similar hearing in the Senate, Commissioner Miriam relayed how his bird club uses the Carlos Avery Wildlife Area just north of the cities for their outings, bird watching. I know in western Minnesota, Lac La Parle and the Salt Lake Wildlife Area on the South Dakota border are prime destinations for many birders in the spring time of the year to see avocets, dowitchers, marbled godwits, and a number of other species that you don't typically see in Minnesota. And we really want to avoid getting into a situation like South Dakota has, where the only way you can access land is by paying somebody and really limiting the opportunity for especially young people and people without rural connections to be able to have access to natural habitats. Finally, we want to reiterate that the committee's report is really a report of what the constituents are asking for. It's not a report by the DNR. It's not a report by the Fish and Wildlife Service. It's a report by citizens. We're saying this is the first time there's been a good plan for WMA acquisition and incorporates all of these benefits and desires, and we really would like to implore the legislature to help make that a reality. Finally, hunters have for many, many years borne the cost of WMAs through the purchase of small game licenses and the wildlife area surcharges on those licenses. There certainly has been some general fund support of WMA acquisition in the past, but we really are asking the legislature today to step up to the plate, help us preserve these lands and acquire these lands before it's too late, so that we can have these as the jewels of our outdoor recreation system into the future. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Committee.
Thank you. Our next speaker, I believe, is Mike LaFleur. That's what, or go ahead, Joe.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Joe Dugan. I'm with Pheasants Forever. I guess I could just dovetail on what Mr. Landwehr just said. All those qualities we certainly agree with. But one thing I would like to call to your attention is Pheasants Forever's membership base of almost 19,000 members are primarily in rural Minnesota. We hold fundraisers and banquets and all kinds of activities throughout the year to raise funds to do things for wildlife in the local communities. I will tell you that the single most popular activity that our chapters get involved with is land acquisition. So rural Minnesota is interested in doing this. They see the same kind of pressures that we're seeing in the Twin Cities and in St. Cloud and Rochester, the development. But recreational property is increasing rapidly in price. The young people and people living in the small towns of rural Minnesota are also finding it difficult to get places to go and enjoy the outdoors. So there's a tremendous interest in rural Minnesota as well as in the metro area. I would also say that I'd like just to tell you a story. When I was growing up, I grew up in South Minneapolis, not too far from Minnehaha Creek. And I'm sure at one time people thought it was crazy early developers of Twin Cities and residents, why they would set aside that whole corridor from roughly Edina all the way to the Minnehaha Falls as a park. Well, I'm glad they did. I grew up there and I spent many, many hours walking along Minnehaha Creek, and to me that was Lewis and Clark, and we were exploring the Great River at that time. Those kind of places are still out in rural Minnesota. If we don't do something now, those places won't be there. This is an excellent way to leverage the interest of rural Minnesotans and the city folks here in the city to develop or to protect those properties. And we wholeheartedly support this bill and encourage you to pass it this year. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Committee. My name is Mike LaFleur. I had the good fortune to represent the Isaac Walton League on the Citizens Committee and attended the meetings. And I don't really want to address the biological benefits of wildlife management areas or the recreational benefits, because that has been done by people that are more qualified than I. But I would ask you to take a look at the colored handout that we have provided for you, and just take a look at the bottom line there of the groups that are represented. Because often when we discuss these types of issues, political pundits like to try and draw a distinction between the hook and bullet groups and the environmental groups. And we like to just, one likes sometimes to disparage the other or to reduce the efforts of the other. And I really want to, the committee to understand that this was a joint effort between some of the traditional groups like Pheasants Forever and Ducks Unlimited, and it was also an effort by some of the more environmental groups, if we want to draw that distinction, such as the Nature Conservancy, the Conservation Federation, the Isaac Walton League, and others. So this is a uniform belief that these are very, very special areas that are managed to produce wildlife and for all the other benefits that you've heard about. And these things have universal appeal across the political spectrum and across environmental and conservation values. And I would just ask the court, excuse me, the committee. Well, I'm not sure where I am today. I would ask the committee to give this kind of universal support to all these groups that represent all these different ways of looking at the environment and outdoor recreation. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Gary Botzik, Your Honor, if I might address the committee. Representing the Minnesota Conservation Federation, and Gordy Meyer is here today, but he asked me to step forward. He and I went up to Rice, Minnesota last night, up on Highway 10, and met with the Rice Sportsman's Club. And there's an example of a local sportsman's club using pull tabs that raises a lot of money, and a lot of that money goes into working with the DNR to acquire and manage WMAs. It's a perfect local state partnership that exists throughout Minnesota and mentioned by a number of the previous speakers. The Minnesota Conservation Federation was a participant in the task force that Lance chaired. Gordy Meyer served on it. We're very supportive of it. It's also being supported by the Minnesota Environmental Partnership. We made our briefing book here. It's a very important aspect of clean water in Minnesota. As you know, buffering, land retirement is an important part of water quality improvement in our plan. So with that, I would offer our support and urge you to give it serious consideration as you put your bonding recommendations together. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Is there anyone else? Okay, is there anyone else that wishes to speak for or against House File 1939? Okay, we will lay this bill over then for possible inclusion in the bonding proposal from the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you. Members, the next bill we'll have up is House File 1867. And I'll move House File 1867, possible inclusion in the committee's bonding proposal. And the members, this is the I'm the author on this bill, and it's the Trails Bill, and it really is to provide us with some economic, social, and health benefits to our state and for our communities. And one of the things I think is very important for people to recognize as the bill will be presented by Ms. Erickson is that these are mostly the trail activities are really locally driven activities, and it's just this is something that the state gets involved with that really impacts all across the state of Minnesota and really provides for wonderful benefits that without our participation would not be possible. Ms. Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, and I'd like to thank you also, Representative Osment, for authoring this legislation. This year is actually the 50th anniversary of the Parks and Trails Council of Minnesota, and we have a number of projects and special events to commemorate our anniversary. And this Trails Initiative really does kind of represent who we are and what our vision for the future is. In your folders, you should have a packet, a folder from the Parks and Trails Council. There's detailed information in there about the initiative, a short fact sheet, a long fact sheet, a list of supporters for your review. And as I go through, I'll be covering quickly some of the material in those packets. Minnesota State Trails offer something for everyone in every season of the year. You're able to explore Minnesota, regions of the state, beautiful places that we have at your own pace on a trail. They are a proven framework for tourism, rural economic development, and revitalization. But an emerging theme coming from some of our supporters is that trails provide opportunities to improve the health of citizens of our state of Minnesota by providing opportunities for them to get physically active. And trails provide a safe alternative, transportation alternative, complementing roads and commuter routes. Minnesota's state trails have been important to our communities for over 30 years. State trails are those that are authorized by the legislature and are managed and are under the jurisdiction of the DNR. There are approximately 400 miles of state trails already developed in Minnesota. And we believe now is the time to accelerate the investment to strengthen our trail system. Our trails initiative was developed with the input from the citizens groups that work across the state on their local and regional trails. So we've developed this as a grassroots up initiative. This initiative would acquire or rehabilitate or develop over 100 miles of new trails. And it's broken into, we have several different components. Accelerated trail development are those trails that are authorized, have been authorized by the legislature, but are in varying degrees of development stages. But they have several segments developed, and this funding would accelerate the development of those trails. It moves it along at a quicker pace, but it does not complete the trail. Trails covered under this section include the Goodhue Pioneer Trail at $2.5 million, the Gitche-Gami Trail at $2.5 million, Glacial Lakes Trail at $1.3 million, Blazing Star Trail at $1.7 million, the Shooting Star Trail at $800,000, and the Gateway Trail at $660,000. Trail extension component of this initiative includes trails that are well established, but where additional communities or state resources seek to link to the trail. One of the things that you look at, if you look at the state trail system, is that there are sort of anchors to the mall kind of a thing. And in this case, on these trail extensions, we are seeking to extend the trail to new tenants in the trail mall. The Paul Bunyan Trail, there are two projects. It's $2 million. One is for a bridge crossing in Brainerd that would allow, was the first step toward extending the trail south of Brainerd to Crow Wing State Park, a tenant in the mall. And on the north end of the Paul Bunyan Trail in Bemidji, additional resources are needed to get the trail into the city of Bemidji, another bridge project. In southeastern Minnesota, the Bluffland Trail system, we have two projects there. The Forestville Trail, which would link into Forestville State Park, is at $2.9 million. And the Rochester to Chester Woods Yoda Trail is at $1.1 million. Then the Gateway Trail, which currently ends at Pine Point Park in Washington County, we would seek additional $500,000 to continue land acquisition for that trail. In the area of trail rehabilitation, our package would provide not only for rehabilitating state trails, but to widen them. Many of the trails on this list are at 8 feet wide when they were built. They're some of the older trails in the system. As we rehabilitate the trails, we think it's important to look at widening the trails. And on the Heartland Trail, there's a significant need for rehabilitating the railroad trestles there. The trails in this component then are the Munger, Douglas, Heartland, Paul Bunyan, Gateway, and Loose Line Trails. Then there are new trails that have been authorized by the legislature but are just getting started and at the beginning of their acquisition and development. Milltowns Trail, and we have $1.5 million for that trail. The Casey Jones Trail, down in southwestern Minnesota, $500,000. The Cuyuna Lakes Trail, $800,000. That links the Cuyuna State Recreation Area over to the Paul Bunyan Trail in Brainerd. And then the Minnesota River Trail, $1 million for land acquisition and initial development in the area of Granite Falls. Then we also recognize that there are needs out there in communities and in counties to acquire and develop trails that are not state trails. And the DNR has two grant programs that we would seek funding for. The $6 million would be divided equally between the two grant programs. And the state trail connections provide short trail connections from a community to another community sort of in desirable locations. And those are available in the metro area as well as greater Minnesota. And then the regional trails, which are significantly regional trails within an area that are outside of the metro. And these grants are matched with 50% local funding. Trails have significant economic development opportunities and benefits. Regional trails attract visitors from around the state and around the country. They provide a significant boost to the local economy. Communities can expect to generate between $300,000 and $1.5 million worth of economic activity as a result of having a trail in their community. But trails also enhance property values, provide business opportunities, and contribute to community pride. And they are a safe transportation alternative for folks to bike to school or to work, or just to explore Minnesota. Then there are the health benefits to trails that I'll just touch on briefly. The physical inactivity, the Minnesota Department of Health has found, costs Minnesota nearly $500 million each year. Nearly 60% of all Minnesotans are considered overweight. And the healthcare experts and national studies have recognized that trails can be a solution to the long-term healthcare costs associated with physical inactivity, heart disease, diabetes, those kinds of things that put a tremendous burden on our healthcare system in the long run. By increasing physical activity, you can reduce some of those healthcare issues. And that is reflected in the folks that are supporting this initiative. We are really pleased to have on board supporting this initiative the American Cancer Society, the American Heart Association, Be Active Minnesota, Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota, in addition to our other partners, traditional partners, bike shops and bike manufacturers, and our trail towns and communities. So, Mr. Chairman and committee members, we are asking you, the legislature, to take the opportunity to invest in our tourism economy, encourage economic development in rural Minnesota communities, and at the same time, as an added bonus and benefit, you'll provide solutions, one of the solutions, or part of the solutions, to long-term health care costs for our citizens. We appreciate your time this morning. We think this is a win-win proposal, and ask for your support as you put your bonding bill priorities together. Be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there are there any questions before we go to the individual proposals? Okay, as we are going to go to our proposals, what we'd like to do, do you have Mr. Helen, do you have a clarifying question?
I just, on their state trail map, I'm familiar with the Gandy Dancer Trail, but I thought it was all in Wisconsin and it's listed on the Minnesota state trail map that you passed up. Is any part of it in Minnesota?
I think, you know, Mr. Danger would probably be a better answer for that question, but but yeah, I think some of it does cross over. The railroad grade crosses the river, goes up the east side of the forest.
Okay.
I'm Dorian Grilley with the Parks and Trails Council.
And I'm not sure about the name, but it does go across here. I was on it this year, this summer. The Representative Cornish, we'd like to try and do, if you have a clarifying question.
Okay. No, if you can pass, I'll ask it later.
Okay. What we're going to try and do is to bring up the individual proposals, and then if you can hold your questions to the end, and then we'll see if we have, because we're going to try to get through as many of these as possible. But if there's something you need clarified, you don't understand in the proposal, that we need to address at the time that it's being presented. But for just informational purposes, if we could hold those to the end. Okay, we will have our first testifiers. We'll, let's see, Representative Walls, House File 2056. Chairman Walls, he presents House File 2056. We'll move for possible inclusion in the committees on bonding bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, we will be brief. I have one oral amendment to this bill, if I can do that at this time, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking at the computer printout version, not the real version of this bill. So I think it's on line 7 and on line 14 where it's the $1.2 million. I could change that to 1.5. That was what it was supposed to be when the jackets came over from the Senate. It had the wrong dollar amount on there, and it needs to be changed to 1.5 million.
Okay. All right. Any questions on that amendment? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Bill is amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And if a page could come up here, there's some handouts on this bill at Mr. Terry McGaughey is with me today to answer any questions about this bill. He's the volunteer coordinator for the Paul Bunyan Trail Association, or better known as Terry the Trail Guy. And Mr. Chairman and members, the reason I'm bringing this bill forward is more of a matter of public safety. I've been a police officer in the city of Baxter for 14 years. There was some road construction, some trail construction done in the last year that connected the Paul Bunyan Trail at Excelsior Road in Baxter. That's a road that has a car count daily of 9,500. And from a police officer standpoint and a public safety standpoint, it's my fear that that is a disaster waiting to happen. I brought Mr. McGaughey with me today to answer any questions and to offer just some brief testimony on the importance of this bridge being built over Excelsior Road so we can make sure that no accidents do happen there. And at this time, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. McGaughey.
Thank you, Dale Waltz. Mr. Chairman, I first appeared before this committee in 1988 when this body authorized the creation of the Paul Bunyan Trail, and we received first funding in 1990, and it's become one of the most significant trails in Minnesota as well as the nation. We're nearing completion in the sense that we've got 68 miles of paved bike trail from Baxter, Brainerd, Minnesota to north of Walker, and we have 15 miles of new trail south of the bridge that we're speaking of, and a land acquisition tending to include a trail link to Crow Wing State Park. So ultimately we're going to have a trail system that will link Crow Wing State Park on the south to Lake Bemidji State Park on the north. And last October, as you see in the handout, there was a tunnel that was a project conducted and constructed in part with the highway improvement project that took over a rail spur that now allows an extension of the trail linking the south portion of the trail to the north portion. And as Representative Walls alluded to, that we're talking about a safety hazardous condition. We've got now a new $1 million arboretum building at the parking lot under construction that will open in June of this year, as well as an addition of this tunnel as an attraction to bring people up to a crossing on Excelsior Road, which is the most dangerous crossing on the whole 100 miles of the Paul Bunyan Trail. And we would hope that you would see fit to agree with us that this is a real safety consideration and it's necessary to build the bridge because there's no alternative. As outlined in the brochure, the roadway is intended to become a four-lane road and traffic is often bumper to bumper and 30 to 40 miles an hour, and we're going to have a lot of traffic coming to the head parking lot at the Paul Bunyan Trail. I'll be glad to answer any questions quickly.
And just a clarifying question, the dollars that are being requested here are for the bridge. That's the total request?
Mr. Chairman, that is for the bridge. And the feasibility study was funded by the City of Baxter for $8,000 to determine what kind of a bridge would work there. And in fact, there were some wetlands that needed to be addressed, and all that was addressed in the feasibility study. So the construction costs are as stated in the brochure, in 04 costs.
Okay. Clarifying questions? Representative Kahn?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, as you know, Terry, I'm a longtime supporter of the trail, and I've probably ridden it more than anyone else in the room except the local people. But one of the things that was bothersome the last time I was there was the non-paving of the final section of the trail into Walker. What's happened with that?
The construction has been concluded, Representative Kahn, to connect to the Heartland Trail at Walker, just north of Hackensack. 18 miles were completed last summer. And there is a three-quarter mile link right now that will be paved first thing in the spring when construction permits, that will tie the two paved trail sections together. That still remains a 30-mile of unpaved section of trail from Walker to Bemidji that we hopeful will come back in another bonding year to look for.
It was about a six-mile section on one of those trails, but it was a Heartland or Paul Bunyan that was not paved to Walker.
It's now paved all the way to Walker.
Great.
And because of our time constraints today, we're going to try to hold our questions just clarifying if we can. Any other testifiers?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. House File 2056 is laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members.
Do the same with House File 1939, House File 1867 be laid over for possible inclusion. Now our next would be House File 2012, Representative, and House File 2130, Representative Fuller.
Mr. Chairman, good morning. Good morning, committee members. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be before you today. I have with me the mayor of the city of Bemidji, Richard Lehman, Councilman Jerry Downs of the city of Bemidji, and the city manager, David Minke. We are before you today to talk about the north end of the Paul Bunyan State Trail that the city of Bemidji has been working very hard with the DNR to try and put together what is probably, what I see, is the most important trail connection piece in the state of Minnesota. Being passed out to you right now is a map not only of the Paul Bunyan Trail, but in there is also a map of the connection that we're talking about in the city of Bemidji. This has become a very complex connection piece dealing with the railroad bed, other pieces of property that my testifiers here today will help try and explain a little bit better. But in my point of view, this is a very important piece to really connect, you know, the trail all the way up through to the Bemidji State Park. That timing is now because of acquisition questions and the development of some property on the south end of the lake of Lake Bemidji. Really, this has become a very important issue that we need to deal with in this bonding session. So, Mr. Chair, with your indulgence, I'd like to have the representatives of the City Council say a few words and better try and explain this issue here.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourselves for the record.
Thank you. I'm Richard Lehman, Mayor of the City of Bemidji. And as Representative Fuller stated, this is a very important piece to the Paul Bunyan Trail. The trail currently gets into Bemidji, does not get out of Bemidji, because we are lacking the connections necessary to bring the trail through the entire area. The opportunity presents itself at this time because of some changes that have occurred along the southeast side of Lake Bemidji, and we would really like to take this opportunity then to complete that connection. We are having, of course, some snowfall this year, which has brought the issue probably more to light than it has in the past few years, simply because the traffic necessary to get from the entrance into the city on the south end or coming in from the north end needs to find a way to connect the two, and consequently are going through some of the residential areas in the city to make that connection, which makes this connection a very important piece to us, as well as the crossing on Highway 197, where on an average, I believe MnDOT's numbers are someplace in the vicinity of 29,000 cars a day travel. And the expectations of that are that the numbers there are going to just continue to increase in traffic volume.
And Mr. Chairman and members, as you're looking at your map, that area, that connection that goes over Highway 197 in Bemidji is the red circle, which is there, that is currently six lanes of traffic when you add the turn lane. So there's some real issues. The Department of Transportation, the DNR, and the city have been working to try and come up with you know, what's the best solution there, whether it be an at-grade crossing or a crossing over. They're working that out and all working together. But if you look at your map, it's that red circle is where the real piece comes into play with public safety and the danger with trying with all those cars every day.
Yes, my name is Jerry Downs with Bemidji City Council, and we've been looking into this issue now for 3 years. The primary concern is the traffic flow on 197, which is exceeding 20,000 cars a day on average, and in the summertime it peaks out much higher than that. We need to logistically get people through the city on the yellow line there, as you see from the Paul Bunyan Trail coming in from the south, crossing 197. And the yellow corridor closest to the lake there is the land acquisition issue that we need to acquire. It's a railroad bed going through an old industrial plant site called Georgia Pacific. And we feel this is key to the last missing link of the Paul Bunyan Trail. Excuse me. And there's a developer who has the other part of the more polluted site along the lake side that will be developing that. But it's important that we acquire access through there to get to the trailhead over where the red part is over on the far right. And right now we have a lot of snowmobile traffic coming through our town, wandering through the streets, creating safety problems, and there are petitions against snowmobiling rising in Bemidji as we speak, which is not good. Bemidji is the center to more snowmobiling trails leaving Bemidji than anywhere else in the state right now. It's creating a safety problem, and crossing 197 is a severe logistics problem we need to deal with.
I believe that through the actions of the city council to acquire some of the land necessary to complete some of the trail, this is a state trail, as you're well aware of, but the city of Bemidji recognizes the importance of completing this connection. And so the area that's outlined in green, the kind of a triangular shaped area, the city is currently working on procuring that area so that we can work closer to get this trail crossing completed. Also, it will help us to continue the trail through to the west side of town. So there are many, many benefits to completing this section of the state trail in Bemidji for the purpose of making a nice, smooth, and safe traffic of snowmobiles and other recreational uses of that trail.
Okay. Other testifiers?
No, I think that's it, Mr. Chairman. This request is for $5.2 million. The other bill before you is one for $400,000, which is in the governor's request for some riprap on the southeast side of the lake there along the trail to protect it. But this piece, the yellow line you're looking at, currently is $5.2 million. We understand it's a large chunk of money, but as you can see, you know, as we've gotten this trail just into and out of the city of Bemidji, we've really got this problem narrowed down to now where we have a complex issue of several pieces of property. The property acquisition costs are going up because we're right in the city of Bemidji. We're dealing with lakeshore property. But that piece right along that south end of Lake Bemidji is currently under redevelopment, and the timing is right this year to get the dollars available to acquire and get this piece of the trail finished, and would appreciate your support.
Move the House File 2130 and House File 2012 be moved for possible inclusion in the bonding proposal of the committee. Representative Deal, you had a clarifying question?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Mayor, is this connection going to connect the Brainerd Lakes area through Bemidji and on to International Falls? That's right.
Currently, if you leave Brainerd heading in the Bemidji direction with the intent to ultimately go to International Falls, you're going to run into quite a roadblock in the city of Bemidji because there's no way to get directly from the Paul Bunyan Trail to the Blue Ox Trail.
Mr. Chairman, Bob. So this is what we would call in the metropolitan area bottleneck.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Representative
Khan. Chairman, what kind of development is proposed for that yellow section that you say is going to be under development?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the developer has no concrete plans on what the development will be there. There was a proposal that they shelved last summer And currently it's being considered, the developer is currently discussing working with the city for the development, but what it will look like at this point in time, we're not 100% sure.
Well, the suggestion, I know that's been done in other places. The city, I imagine, has to give something to the developer for that development. You've got to do something with zoning or supplying some kind of services and so forth. One of your requirements could be that the developer supply a trail through the area that they're going to get to develop. That's something that has been done as one of the conditions of development. And I have another question, which has been a long problem in the area, and I don't know if it's been solved now. What's happening with studded snowmobiles disturbing the surfaces of the trails?
They're currently banned. There's no plan for the city of Bemidji to allow that.
Yeah, okay. Is enforcement working, or are they staying off it? I don't care what the laws are. I care what the surface of the trail is like.
I use the Paul Bunyan trail year-round, and for the most part,
rollerblading,
running, biking, snowmobiling. I don't see studded track on it. I think they use the lake. You can access the lake and use that. The DNR supervises the Paul Bunyan Trail extensively, and they have stop points and checkpoints.
Great.
I can talk to you about that issue of the developer's development on Georgia Pacific site. That is a very polluted area. We don't know when and if that will get developed. Currently, they're trying to subdivide it into 17 different lots. Some may be polluted, some may not be polluted. We don't know if we could ever put together a trail through there once those are divided. There's really no guarantees in this matter at all. That's why it's important that we acquire the railroad bed behind the shoreline.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if I could just very briefly, so the committee understands, this piece of property that's the yellow line splits right there has a railroad bed from Burlington Northern that goes through it that the developer of the property currently does not own yet. He is in negotiations trying to acquire that property, and depending on what happens there, if that doesn't work, Burlington Northern would then negotiate with the city or the DNR or whoever, or we would end up then negotiating with that property owner. So it's really split into two: property he owns and the railroad bed goes through that he's currently negotiating on. Is that correct? Okay. I just wanted to let you know that he currently does not own it all, but is in negotiations and is split in two by the railroad bed.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, then the $5 million is for the full development, not just the acquisition. And another thing, I thought, and maybe we just considered this and didn't do it, I thought that public entities had some first right of refusal of railroad lines, either with federal or state law.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, the charters that the $5.2 million is for acquisition and construction,
yes.
Of which I think the piece going through that property, because of the cost per square foot with the lakeshore and others, is $3.3 million for that.
Just another, for acquisition?
Right. Of that piece there is another $500,000. The Y part in the green is $400,000. Another piece of the Y there is $150,000. So the 5.2 includes the acquisition and construction to put all these pieces together. The challenge is that there are so many different pieces, it isn't just one, you know, piece of property that they're going to end up negotiating for.
But there isn't a requirement or something to first look at public ownership of the right-of-way?
Not according to the railroad. We don't have our city attorney here, but...
Mr. Chair, Representative... We have
identify yourself for the record, please.
City manager of Bemidji, David Minkey. We have attempted to approach the railroad, and they are only wanting to work with the developer. And I think part of that issue is because the developer apparently has money that we don't have. We don't have the resources to go in there and negotiate with the railroad to purchase it without funding. And so I don't think they've been wanting to deal with us. And they think they have a better prospect in working with the developer. And as was pointed out earlier, that the proposed development, the property that landowner owns, is to the lakeside of the proposed trail and isn't necessarily integral to the trail. In an ideal situation, it would obviously be incorporated, but as we pointed out, we've got the trail coming from the south, the trail coming from the north, and people get here and there's nowhere to go. This acquisition would complete that and would allow for that flow to happen. And the city is currently, I think as the mayor pointed out, in negotiations with the railroad for that portion outlined in green that's called the Y. From there, running to the Mississippi River where it runs between Lake Bemidji and Lake Irvin, we're currently negotiating with the railroad for that. And the city recently purchased from there west to the city limits from the railroad, that railroad corridor, with city funds. And so should this Paul Bunyan Trail be completed, there will also be options for the trail to go west through the city as well.
Okay, we're going to move on, and unless there's some burning questions.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate the time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
House Files 2012 and 2130 will be laid over for possible inclusion. The House File 1714, Representative Dill. Representative Dill. Just push him out of the way. We got to go here.
We're trying to get the overhead going on.
Yeah.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members, Representative Dill on the Gitche-Gami Trail. And on my right is Lee Radzik. He is the property supervisor at the Split Rock Lighthouse, one of our most visited state historical sites. And to my left is Tom Porter, a businessman from Silver Bay, Beaver Bay. And we're here to talk about two segments of the Gitche-Gami Trail that are proposed in this bonding bill. And okay. I'll let Mr. Radzik go ahead with this.
As you're doing that, Representative Dill moves House File 1714 be presented for possible inclusion in the bonding proposal. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Again, my name is Lee Radzik, and I'm also the president of the Gitche-Gami Trail Association, which is the local, of course, support group of the Gitche-Gami State Trail. We Minnesotans have a love affair with our Lake Superior coast, and that's been continuous since 1924 when the highway, the North Shore Highway, was first built along the North Shore. More people are driving for vacations now, and less people are flying. This adds to the regional and national significance of this North Shore Drive, in addition to it, Highway 61 now being an all-American roadway, which I believe at the last count there's only 19 of them within the country, which is a step up from the scenic byways. The corridor is also home for the Superior Hiking Trail, the Lake Superior Water Trail, which is a kayak trail along the shore, and now the Gitche-Gami State Trail, which is a 10-foot paved trail, which got state designation in 1999, and continues to be developed. It's a unique trail. We are going for premier trail status. It's a combined effort between the Minnesota Department of Transportation, the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and the Gitche-Gami Trail Association. And to that end, it's been the support for the trail has been very extensive, very good. The trail is meant to be completed by 2011. It will run through two harbors, Grand Marais, 86 miles, and it will be between the Highway 61 corridor and Lake Superior shoreline. It'll connect six state parks, one state historic site, the Split Rock Lighthouse, three science and natural areas, and nine communities. And it has been, I want to mention that the LCMR has been very helpful in sections of the trail so far. There's 26 sections in all that will be that it will be broken down into, and six have been completed for about 12 miles of completed trail to this point. And we're here to ask for $2.5 million to complete two additional sections, which will tie into sections that are already completed. So it will put more completed trail on the ground. The two trail sections that we're looking at, and if I could figure out how to get the overhead up here, we could. Okay.
I shut the microphones off first, I believe. The screens just take a second.
The overhead should come right on it.
Yeah.
Oh, not the pole.
Oh, there we go.
No. Very good.
There, I give you some visuals, committee. We are looking at, as I mentioned, and in the handout you have the map that shows the two sections. The one is Cascade River State Park to Grand Marais, which is will attach to a 1.5 mile section that has just been completed in the town of Grand Marais. And the other section is down within Gooseberry Falls State Park. Another visual just to give you an idea what the trail looks like. Again, this trail is it's an amazing landscape. It doesn't follow any railroad grades, of course. It's on the North Shore. It's a trail that's going to access as many points along the shoreline and as close to the shoreline as possible as it reaches state parks and goes on to state property. Otherwise, it will be closer to Highway 61. It's already attracted an amazing amount of attention from users. Everybody that comes up from the Twin Cities, very heavy user, Twin Cities use of the North Shore, as we all know. And also the locals, it's connecting the local communities, which is very helpful, Mr. Chairman. We also have Tom Porter here, who is a local business owner in Beaver Bay, and he could comment on what the trail has meant to the local communities and local businesses along the North Shore also.
My name is Tom Porter, Mr. Chair and members. It's nice to be down here today. I own a restaurant in Beaver Bay. I also serve on the city council and on the board of the North Shore Management Board, the North Shore Management Board. And my main concern for years has been the proper development of what the North Shore is and to protect it so that it doesn't become overdeveloped and kind of like a Wisconsin Dells situation. And this trail is very important to that for recreational tourism, not only to bring people from all over the country, but I have also had phone calls from Belgium about future interests in bike tours coming over here. But it also means a lot up and down the shore to the local businessmen and the small business, especially such as mine. The trail was open from the Beaver River in Beaver Bay to the Split Rock River, which is about 7.5 miles last year. And just that little bit has brought a big impact to Beaver Bay and the future of what's going to happen on the whole North Shore and what it brings up from the Twin Cities. Not only that, but in my restaurant, we have a map, a worldwide map that says where in the world are you from, and you can take a pin and put where you're at. And it was so impressive one time that it was written up in Northwest Orient Airlines magazine, and it just shows the impact of the North Shore and what we have with Gooseberry and Split Rock and up and down the shore and what it brings. But I guess the thing that I want to let you know is that this is not only a good investment for the tourism to the state, but the people that live on the North Shore and what they can do and how it helps them. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chairman,
I'd like to read my motion. Okay. House File 1714 is laid over for possible inclusion in the body.
Thank
you very much. House File 1967. Representative Anderson.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
I'll move the House File 1967 be presented for possible inclusion in the binding proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And before I get started, if I could ask for a small author's amendment, technical amendment. It's on line 10, strike Teopi and insert Leroy.
Okay. Members have heard the amendment. Page 1, line 10, strike Teopi, insert Leroy. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Bill's amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. The Shooting Star Trail in southeastern Minnesota in Moore County was included in the Ventura bonding proposal in 2002. That proposal did pass both houses, but then this particular proposal was a line item veto by Governor Ventura. The urgency of this proposal is that there is $416,000 of federal money that is appropriated, which has a sunset of fiscal year 05. And so it's important that if we're going to use that federal money to help in this trail development, that we pass this in this bonding bill this year. So that's why I bring it forward. The appropriation from bonds would be $800,000, and it would to construct the segment of the trail from Leroy to Rose Creek. And I have two people here that would like to testify. I have Gerald Meyer from Prairie Visions, who is the volunteer organization that oversees the Shooting Star Trail, and Moore County Commissioner Dave Hilliard.
Welcome to the committee.
I'm Gerald Meyer. I'm a vice chairman, member of Prairie Visions, which is, I would like to explain a little bit what it is. It's four towns in Moore County, Leroy, Teopi, Adams, and Rose Creek. We formed a joint powers agreement to better our four towns. It's all a volunteer organization. We meet once a month. We have subcommittees. We have a committee that works with our state park. We have a committee that works with bike trail. We have an education committee that works. And it's all done with volunteers. We meet this once a month so we can put things together, and if people are having trouble with it, we can straighten it out. If you don't know where Moore County is, it's about 40 miles straight south of Rochester. We have approximately 10 miles of Park Service Trail finished from Leroy to Teopi. It runs along the southern edge of Moore County. If you can look at your map inside your little brochure, that will kind of explain it a little bit better. Just where it's at. It'll be about approximately 32 miles long from Leroy to Austin when it's completed. It's going to connect up in Austin with the Blazing Star Trail and on the west, and Root River Trail on the east. When this is completed, it's going to connect three state parks together, Fortville, Lake Louise, and Big Island in Albert Lea. So it is quite important for those state parks that the trails are completed between them. We also are close enough to the Iowa border that we have people that have been talking to us that wish to come across and join our trails. We have people from Riceville and also from Pine Springs who would like to connect on to us when we get that far along. So it will be an interstate trail connection. We have a lot of volunteers but very little money, and that's why we're here. And right now on the trail, it is completed. We have one gentleman that comes with a snowblower and blows, opens it up in Leroy to the state park. So people that need to walk in the wintertime and stuff, when the weather's permitted, they can use it. We also have another gentleman, Leroy, that goes and fix the trail, you know, the track and stuff on the trail. He does that once a month. We have a gentleman in Keopi that does mowing along it. And I just was told by a fellow that when we get the rose grass, he'll see if it needs to be open in the wintertime that it's open. So we have plenty of help out there. But we like I say, we need some bonding money. It is used extensively, really heavy, a lot more than we ever realized. And we're finding it isn't just bikers from outside the area. We have a lot of people with handicaps that are using it. It's a flat trail, so it is accessible to wheelchairs, and people with walkers can walk it. And it is in segments so that they can walk like a half a mile or a mile. We have an 83-year-old gentleman that's losing his eyesight, and his wife leads him off on 1 mile, and she goes around to the other mile and picks him up when he comes across. And I just talked to him the day before yesterday, and he was telling me, he said, you know, he said, you don't realize how great a thing that is for me to be able to walk that and not worry about stumbling on cracks in the sidewalk. And he said, I'm outside in areas where I'm out in the country. And he farmed for most of his life. But it is an even great trail. It's about 5% in that slope where it is, and most of them are... The longest I would say is 200 feet. You go over a little knoll and then you're going down. So you have a chance to rest a little bit if you would like. And it's very diversified. Probably I would say we have the most diversified area or trail in Minnesota. For the simple reason, start out when you leave the roadway in Leroy, you go by a handicapped fishing pond, you go by a dam, by a lake, a beach, you go through the state park. In the state park there's a 100-year-old forest that has been, the trees have been tested and verified that that's how old they are. When we did our historical survey, we found that just off in this trail, in a lot of different places, there was Indian encampment. And a lot of that is because of the church mine that's in Grand Meadow. They would go there and they would mine the church, and then they would come down along the river by Leroy and work on this stuff. It was mostly garbage we found, and that's why they said that this was the reason for that being. When you get out of the state park, you go into farmland, and we went along, we got permission from the farmers to go along their fence line. So you're going through farmland, you're going through bean fields, corn fields, and this type of thing. We have pastures and places where a fellow raises perch and horses, and when we get to Adams, you'll also see the wind generator. So, I thank you from Prairie Vision and myself for considering this funding.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'm Moore County Commissioner David Hillier, and a portion of this area is in my district. As Gerald mentioned, there's four small towns, rural agricultural towns. You see the resolutions that those communities have passed supporting this. One of the things that I think is very important over the time span that Prairie Visions has been working on this trail is the volunteerism. This is truly a grassroots local volunteer group. that has promoted this trail and brought it as far as it's come so far and looking to the future. Moore County has been acting as a fiscal agent, and we have given staff time for grant writing and the various proposals and that the Prairie Visions Committee has needed. Again, I would reiterate that there's some federal funds that have been designated towards this trail that we're at risk of losing late in this year of 2004. And I think one of the statements that is very important that's in your brochure, it talks about Prairie Vision. They have had the patience and the enthusiasm to move that project forward, the same as they showed with the Scenic Byway project. And, of course, that Scenic Byway project was several years ago. Prairie Visions is a good group, and we would ask your support for this in the bonding bill. Thank you.
Could you tell me, is there a local match? Do you have local dollars you're going to be putting into this effort?
Mostly volunteer.
Okay.
We're doing, yeah.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Smaller things, there's matches, like benches, and we also, like our... we have greenhouses in Leroy and Adams. We're going to seed in wildflowers and stuff, and they have agreed to help harvest those and grow them in their greenhouses and plant them out along the trail, and we'll harvest things that are native and also along our shooting star byway, so people will be able to see it from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Appreciate that. Next, we have House File 1073, Representative Stang, and House File 1675, Representative Junkie. Chair will move House File 1073 and House File 1675 be considered for possible inclusion in the bonding proposal. House File 1967 is laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Stang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1073 is bill related to Lake Coronas Trail. It was a trail project that we worked on a couple years ago that was included in the bill in 2002 in the one of the unfortunate line item vetoes of the governor at that time. I'm here with Representative Junkie because his bill is part of the whole extension of the Glacial Lakes Trail in central Minnesota, and this the Lake Coronas Trail is one little part of the bigger trail. It's an extension near the city of Painesville around Lake Coronas. But Representative Junkie can talk more about the bigger trail. And I also have the mayor of Painesville here, Jeff Thompson, if there's specific questions about anything regarding the local activity with that trail.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1675 includes both the extension of the Glacial Lakes Trail from New London up to Painesville, as well as the segment that Representative Stang just talked about. So both of those projects are under one cover here in this bill. Glacial Lakes Trail opened from Wilmer to New London in 1996. The first segment, it's about a 12-mile segment. It runs through the Northern Lakes area of Candiota County. There's access over to Sibley State Park. What we need to do with this next extension now from New London to Painesville is to pave the trail. There's also a safety concern, members and Mr. Chair, on this. And I gave you a handout, and you will see that Greg Sapir, the DNR trails person in our area, had sent on the third page there. There's a railroad crossing, and it's a blind crossing across that trail now. So part of this request, as you can see by the breakdown, is to also construct a bridge over that high-speed rail crossing. So we do have safety concerns. This will be the next segment to this trail, which will actually make it a day trip
type trail rather than a local use trail. Obviously 12 miles is nice, but this will extend it out to roughly 22 miles and make it a more of a destination for tourism. And certainly Representative Stang and myself and Heigerken, who this trail runs through his district too, do have our eyes on the next phase, which you see the numbers for. We're not asking for that this year, but from Painesville up to Cold Spring. You should also be aware that that Highway 23 is being rebuilt right now from St. Cloud down to Richmond. From Cold Spring on, they're actually leaving space along that highway for future trail construction. So ultimately, we hope this will be a trail in the next few years that will go all the way from Wilmer to St. Cloud. And it's an important trail on the west central part of the state. And with that, any questions, we'll be happy to answer.
Any questions? Clarifying questions? I guess not. Thank you very much. House File 1675 and House File 1073 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the bonding proposal. We will now have House File 1767, Representative Davids. 64, House File 1764. Move that House File 1764 be considered for possible inclusion in the bonding proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This would be an extension of the Bluffland Trail system from the city of Preston to Carimona. We're requesting $2.9 million. What I'd like to do is have the three gentlemen that drove up from District 31B. We have, to my left, David Jorg, an attorney from Preston, and we have Richard Nelson, former mayor of Preston, and Dale Willie from Spring Valley, who's been working, they've all been working on this project for quite some time. This, just so the committee knows, this is a project that we have already funded. We funded a few years ago $1.5 million for some acquisition and trail preparation and so forth. So this would be finishing out a segment of the trail. It's not a brand new trail. We've already had some funding with it. And with that, I'll turn it over to Richard Nelson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, I am the chair of the Joint Powers Board Western Extension. We have as members cities of Ostrander, Spring Valley, Chatfield, Fountain, Wyckoff, and Preston. We created this particular organization to try to concentrate on the western part of our trail system. We have been very successful. We've worked very hard. The trail extension that we're talking about today is a trail from Preston to Carimona. Ultimately, it will go through and connect Forestville State Park, historic Forestville, or the Meehan Store, and Mystery Cave. The extension from Preston to Carimona has already started. We have one bridge that is about 95% complete, but even in southern Minnesota, it gets awfully cold, and it just freezes, and we've got to wait until the beginning of a new summer. We also have one bridge that is already designed, and if funds are available in the amount of $2.9 million, we will start bidding that bridge. We will bid the remainder bridges and trail at a later date. I have Mr. Jorg is mentioned, who is to my right, as a consul for this particular organization that we have, and I'd like to have him address the impact of this trail upon southeastern Minnesota. Following his presentation, Mr. Willie will give you the benefit of his work as a registered landscape architect who will tell you something about the trail we are about ready to build. I wish that questions would be directed to either Mr. George or to Mr. Willie. Mr. George.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is David Jorg. I am counsel to the Joint Powers Group that is a consortium of six cities in Fillmore County. And we've been working on trails now for about 15 years. Like Mr. Nelson says, we've been successful, and I've seen firsthand that the development of trails can be an explosive catalyst for economic development. I remember driving down the streets of Lanesboro about 15 years ago, and there was a dog sitting right in the middle of the street, and there wasn't any traffic, so he continued to lay there indefinitely. But now there's a tremendous transformation of that city and the whole Lanesboro area. This trail, we have actually acquired all of the land from Preston to Carmona, this 4.5 trail extension. We've acquired it. It's all paid for. Our joint powers group bought the land in the beginning with borrowed money, and then we turned around and sold it to the state of Minnesota. So the state of Minnesota is already the owner of all of the property necessary to build that trail from Preston to Carmona, an extension of the Root River Trail system. It's been a tremendous economic benefit to the area, and this is a necessary link in getting to Forestville State Park. And I would urge the funding of this project. Thank you very much.
I am Dale Willey. I'm been involved with the design of this trail. The actual length of the trail, because of switchbacks that are going to be on it to deal with grades, will be about 5.3 miles. We have two switchbacks along the way to deal with grades. We will have a maximum grade and minimized maximum grade of 5%, and most of it probably will average 3 to 5%. In some areas are very level. This is an interesting one because there was never a railroad built between Preston and Forestville State Park. So this land, we had to deal with 15 property owners, and we went cross-country working with them and from this from Preston to Carmona. We also have made it available for fishing, trout fishing, have access to the river many places. Another highlight is we are at one point 130 feet above the river, looking over the valley. So scenic-wise, and it's a wooded area of southeastern Minnesota, hardwood forest. But I guess I will end that. It's going to be one of the most scenic trails that I've ever seen. And we would ask the committee to carry on with the $2.9 million that we need to fund this project. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else, Representative Davis?
Oh, I'd open up for questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, any clarifying questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
House File 1764 be laid over for possible inclusion in the bonding proposal. Let's see. The next is House File 1640, Representative Quisling.
And members, I believe there's a delete everything amendment we need to take care of, and I think it's got a blank appropriation, and that needs to be put in at $1.1 million.
Okay, I move House File 1640 be considered for inclusion in the bonding proposal. I'll move the delete everything amendment, H1640A1, and we will, on line 7, page 1, line 7 of that amendment, insert $1.1 million. We will, any questions on, to get this into the form that the author would like, we'll have a motion on, or a vote on that. All in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Bill has been amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This trail is one that has been being developed over the last several years, basically trying to run between Dover, even maybe St. Charles, and into Rochester. The proposal before you is to run from Rochester to the Chester Woods Park, which is a county park that was developed several years ago as part of the Rochester Flood Control. It was a park that the county put tax dollars to enhance the area park system. So this is the first leg of a trail. The original proposal we had was actually to go to Yoda to Chester Woods, but we had some problems with getting some of the right-of-way, which is being worked out, and we'll get that. But we wanted to make sure we had a proposal ready to go, and this one is ready to go. I have with me today Mr. Jeff St. Main and Mr. Wes Bussell, who want to give you the particulars of the bill.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jeff St. Main. I'm chair of the Chester Woods Trails Committee. As I represent, Pleasley said, I'm here with Wes Bussell. Wes is another member of our committee and former mayor of Yoda. I'll just give you a brief description of our trail, and Wes will be more specific about our first phase. We are a group of volunteers that have been working for the last 10 years on this extension of the Bluffland Trail System. We have been originally grew out of Yoda and the city of Yoda, and they are still our fiscal agents. What our plans are is to connect through the city of Rochester up to the Douglas Trail to the north, and then the city of Rochester has an extensive trail system that will connect on the where our trail ends up on County 11, just outside the edge of Rochester. We want to connect into Chester Woods County Park, which is a 993-acre park, and then we will go on to the cities of Yoda and Dover, with future expansions that would connect the Great River Ridge Trail to the north. That trail is half done. It's been done more with private funds. It's not part of the state trail system, but they have the majority of that acquired. Well, they have it all acquired, and they have about half of it paved, and the other half is a hiking trail that's ready to go. First phase, and then to the south, we would like to connect with the Root River Trail, as you see on our map that we put out. phase one is we'll follow an environmental corridor that the city of Rochester, the county of Homestead County, set up a number of years ago, and it'll run along Bear Creek, and then we'll tie in with the Homestead County Park, Chester Woods. The phase two will go from Chester Woods Park to Yoda and then on to Dover. The city of Yoda has been extremely helpful and supportive. We have a current budget with the city of $14,000 for trail development, and they've allocated another $50,000 for bringing the trail through the city. Phase three is the third part that we'd like to where we'd like to connect up with the Great River Ridge Trail. We've been working with them, and at this time they are through the cities of Plainview and Elgin, and the trail extends on the old railroad right-of-way down to County Road 9, and that, as I said, half of that is paved already. They also have an easement that would take us all the way to Highway 14, so that trail is pretty much ready to go once we do our connections. We have a number of associations, sport associations. Homestead County has endorsed our trail and has passed a resolution supporting us. The city of Rochester, as I mentioned earlier, has agreed to connect up with our trail, and we have been on their long-term plans for quite a number of years. City of Yoda, as I mentioned, has got some money set aside for it, and they are still very determined that we should pursue this and move forward. The city of Dover, Roger Erke, mayor of Dover, is also sits on our trail committee, and they have been very supportive as well. We have got a local county group, CardioVision 2020, that is supporting our troop or our trail, and they are a group that is trying to make Olmsted County more healthy by the year 2020. We were authorized by the state legislature, so we are part of the state trail system authorized. We've been working quite closely with the DNR and the Minnesota State Trails Group. In 1999, we were awarded $50,000 by the legislature for acquiring options and doing planning. We were able to, the DNR had estimated that we would need $54,000 for those two early phases. We thought that $4,000 would be enough with volunteer help to finish that out. In fact, we were able to go out and working with engineers, volunteers, and landowner contacts through the volunteers, we were able to accomplish that those two first phases with only $16,000. The other $34,000 was then turned back into the state. And I'll let Wes Bussell do a little more detail on the first phase.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Our overhead went down on us again, so I just want to try to shoot by the map that was just handed out. And we're located in the orange portions in the center part of the map. And this trail system that we're working on as phases connects, it becomes the nucleus or the major hub of the connecting of many trails, including our predecessor group that was just ahead of us, the river trail system to the south. So what we're proposing is and asking for funding is to connect all the other trails in southeast Minnesota into a one trail system. And our first phase is Rochester to the Big Chester Woods Park. Of that, approximately 7.5 miles, 2.5 miles will be done and taken care of by the city of Rochester, connecting at our starting point, so we won't need funding for that. The Olmsted County and City of Rochester have also allocated some more land around along the river corridor, so we don't have land acquisition there. All the land acquisition we need has basically been taken care of, and so we're looking for the $1.1 million, and with our past history of our funding before, we hope to do the project for significantly less.
Mr. Chair, that's our presentation. I know following Representative Davids, we only get the crumbs. He's kind of the expert on this area. But this is an important thing. It will connect into the Rochester Trail System. They have a bike and a walking trail system that's quite intensive. So they are supportive of this to get to Chesterwood. But it also has the support of many local communities that are working on this also. So thank you, the committee. It's nice to be here, Mr. Chairman, without a controversial bill for once somehow.
Thank you. The and House File 1640 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the bonding bill. There's in order to make that amendment fit, we're going to ask staff to try and to make some adjustments on that. Without objection, we'll deal with that rather than another motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Thank you.
Let's see, we have next possible sheet. Representative Dempsey, House File 1847. And we're going to be running over a little bit to try and get everyone in here yet today. So hope people be aware of that. Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got some good news for you. We're going to be brief. Fair enough?
Sounds okay. Great. We'll move all your right. Bill in. House File 1847, Director, be considered for possible inclusion.
Okay, very good. You have before you House File 1847, and it has to do with the Goodhue Pioneer Trail. And I have with me to make about a two-minute talk in regard to this particular issue. Roxanne Bartish, and she is the president of the organization that is moving this particular piece of legislation forward, and also this trail to be part of the major trails in the area of southeastern Minnesota. So, Ms. Bartsch.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me time to address your committee. My name is Roxanne Bartsch, and I live in Zumbrota, Minnesota. I'm here today with Representative Dempsey on behalf of the Goodhue Pioneer Trail Association. Our group has been working to support the development of this trail since 1994, when the legislature authorized it for trail development. The trail, when completed, will include the cities of Red Wing, Goodhue, Zumbrota, Mazeppa, Belchester, and Pine Island. This trail will link two existing trails, the Cannon Valley Trail that travels from Cannon Falls to Red Wing, and the Douglas Trail that travels from Rochester to Pine Island. We chose the name Goodhue Pioneer Trail to recognize the heritage of the land our trail passes through. Starting in the Mississippi Valley, it travels through the most beautiful hardwood forest in our state before ascending into the farms and communities that were established by our immigrant ancestors over 100 years ago. The trail, when completed, will be over 40 miles long and will be a multi-use trail to accommodate a wide variety of users. Our committee has been working very closely with the DNR, securing land acquisition and other funding sources. As members of this committee, I'm sure you're aware of the countless volunteer hours that go into making a trail. I'm proud to say we have a very dedicated group of citizens from throughout our county who are committed to this process. The communities of Red Wing, Goodhue, Zumbrota, Pine Island, and Mazeppa have all been involved in city trail development, with anticipation that their city would someday link to the Goodhue Pioneer Trail. As you've heard from others, trails offer many social, economic, environmental, and health benefits. The money we have proposed in this bill would help us to complete the majority of our trail. Currently, and you'll see in the handout, the trail again goes from Red Wing to Pine Island with two spurs to Belchester and Mazeppa. The funding that we're requesting would complete the Hay Creek to Zumbrota link. Right now, there is funding and there is construction which will be completed on the Red Wing to Hay Creek link. That will be completed this summer. Finally, we recognize that you have tough decisions to make as a committee member, but we would hope that you recognize the progress we've made in our tireless efforts over the last 10 years. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and that concludes our presentation.
Thank you. Appreciate it. House File 1847 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Bonnie proposal. Next will be House File 1956, Representative Cox. Welcome to the committee. I'll move the House Files 1956 be recommended to be included in the Bonnie Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. This bill provides $4 million for bonding to acquire land and develop engineering and construction for the link between the Cannon Valley Trail, which runs from Red Wing to Cannon Falls, and the Sakata Singing Hills, which runs from Faribault to Mankato. And they're shown on the map right there and also on the handout that's coming before you, the solid lines on the, each end of that trail are completed, and I'm concentrating on the gap in the middle. The Milltown State Trail was designated as a state trail approximately 2 years ago. The trail has been partially constructed between Northfield and Dundas, and there are approximately 10 miles of trail yet to complete. Local community has worked hard to raise local funds and research the best location for the completion of this state trail link. The route for the trail generally lies along existing railroad right-of-ways. However, some parts of the trail must go through the Carleton College Arboretum, City of Northfield, and the City of Faribault. These cities, plus Dundas and Carleton College, have supported this trail request. This is a state trail, not a local or regional trail. Hence, state bonding is appropriate, and the $4 million requested in this bill would be sufficient to obtain land and construct the trail from roughly Cannon Falls through Dundas and extend the trail through the City of Faribault. I want to quickly call your attention to a couple pages on the handout before you. The first page outlines the area of where the trail runs, and it is been identified as a border-to-border link, as a critical link for trails in this area, and you just heard Representative Dempsey talking about a trail from Red Wing on down this way. So this is all part of this larger trail in southern Minnesota there. Provides safe off-road recreation. You've heard a number of comments today about safety, and this is a priority in this trail as well. Second page just shows you the map of where the trail is located. Then on the third page, we go a little bit in funding. There's been some local grants. There's been a lot of work that this committee has done to secure funds from different sources for the development of the trail. Then we've got several pictures, but if you flip ahead to page 8, the bonding request, we've essentially got a $2.5 million request that would cover land acquisition and pedestrian bridge over State Highway 21 by Faribault. That's a big deal in order to get the link between the Sagata Trail and the other end of it. And then we have $100,000 of money for the trailhead in Dundas and $1.4 million for the construction of a trail in Northfield and just north of Northfield. That is in part of your, what I'm going to call your bigger bill, Representative Osment. That portion of this is in that. So this isn't on top of that. I have here with me today Peg Prova and Linnell Olson. They're former city council members from Northfield, and they'll address a little bit about the Joint Powers Board and where things have gone with that.
Thank you, Ray. Chairman.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I want to tell you about how much you've already supported this trail. You gave the $350,000 that started the work of the Joint Powers Board that includes Rice County, Faribault, and Northfield. And Dakota County has been working with us on it also. This is a multi-use trail, so snowmobiles will be on it, and except in the cities and in the north, in the Carleton College Arboretum, which is our newly acquired 3 miles of right-of-way.
I'm Linnell Olson. I'm to add to what you've already heard about the value to health and the value to the economy with specifics from our trail. On health, you need to go and watch what's happening on the trail itself and see how many people are there, folks with their kids hiking and biking, and old folks like me doing the same thing. It really is wonderful. In terms of economics, we are trying to bring real difference to the downtowns in the area. And, for example, one of the owners of a bar restaurant in Dundas quit his job, turned it over to somebody else, ran for the city council to make sure that the Dundas City Council continued to support the trail with financial aid. We went to Northfield City Council to ask for bike stands in downtown Northfield and discovered that the NGO Northfield Downtown Development Commission had already come in and asked for more than we were asking for. They were so pleased with what it was going to mean to bring this trail through downtown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. That concludes our testimony, and I'd ask that you support the Milltown Trail request and help us develop this 100-mile link of trail in southern Minnesota. Okay,
thank you very much, Representative Cox. We didn't get your name, this
Peggy,
first lady that testified.
Peggy Prova. Peggy Prova.
Peggy,
and it's
thank you very
P-R-O-W-E.
Much.
P-R-O-W-E.
Okay. And they're both former council members that worked hard on this and have continued to work hard on this trail. They were on the council when the Joint Powers was created.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll lay House File 1956 over for possible inclusion in the bonding proposal. Next, we will have House File 1934, Representative Rhodes.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members.
I'll move that House File 1934 be considered for inclusion in the bonding proposal.
I'll be very, very brief because I know you want to get through all these things and we don't have one of these fancy things. We have fancy booklets. But because this bill actually passed 2 years ago and was in all the way through to the end, and then Governor Ventura vetoed it. And all this basically is the amount has changed, and now it's a little bit more money, but it's a pedestrian bridge that crosses a divided highway. St. Louis Park, for those that haven't had a chance to get over there and spend some money in St. Louis Park, is divided by railroads and highways. And this, what this pedestrian bridge does is connects one end of the city to the other over a divided highway, which is highway, actually I think it's 25 at that point, but it's the old Highway 7, the road to Excelsior. And all we're asking for is that the same bill that passed last time be included this time, and the dollar amount obviously has gone up a little bit since the last 2 years. And I have somebody from the city if you have any questions.
Are there any clarifying questions on this, sir? Remember this proposal before. So. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. Thanks for coming. Okay, we'll House File 1934 will be laid over for possible inclusion. And we'll now have House File 636. Want this together? Representative Hausman. And House File 637.
And Mr. Chair, we are only taking up House File 636. They were drafted at different times. One is a general fund appropriation, one is bonding. And we are only taking up House File 636, which is the bonding proposal.
I'll move House File 636 be considered for inclusion.
And Mr. Chair, I have Councilmember Jay Beninoff, who represents that area, Jack Maloney, the Denoyer Park Association. Denoyer Park is the neighborhood surrounding this, and John Anfinson from the National Park Service here, who will discuss the project. And for future reference, in this briefing book, it is page 35, and if you need to go back and take a look at the problem, that is there for you, and I don't know in what order you'd like to go.
Please identify yourselves for the record.
My name is Jay Beninoff. I'm a city council member here in St. Paul representing this area. And I'm going to turn over in a minute to John Anfinson. But let me tell you, I've been sitting here for an hour, and these trail proposals up are really exciting. And I, you know, hopefully you'll fund them all. I think one of the great things about this state is that we have recognized the value of trails and parks, and it's really what makes Minnesota livable. And I think this is a proposal that fits quite well into this. It is a proposal which we'll explain in a second, but it uncovers a historic site in St. Paul along the river, one of our, of course, most valuable resources along the Mississippi River. It is a proposal that is supported by the mayor and this entire St. Paul City Council. And if you know our politics, that's pretty unusual. So I would ask that you, after hearing this, that you support it. I think at this time we're going to turn over to John Anfinson from the National Park Service.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John Anfinson. I'm with the Mississippi National River and Recreation Area, a unit of the National Park Service that runs for 72 miles along the Mississippi and the Twin Cities area. And one of our authorizing missions that Congress gave us was to identify, protect, and interpret nationally significant sites within this corridor that we have. And this site was completed in 1907, the first lock and dam on the Mississippi, destroyed in 1912, after only 5 years, a brand new site. And the mayor of Minneapolis asked the Corps of Engineers, why did you destroy a five-year-old dam? And the Corps of Engineers had two answers. One was, he said there was a secret history behind this, and said there was a city of Minneapolis and a city of St. Paul, and such a dam couldn't be located completely with one or the other. So you got two locks and dams. He said there was a secret history. The second thing he said, things like this happen in countries where people have boats. An interesting local account. I'm here to focus on the national significance of this. This is the first lock and dam on the Mississippi River. We just nominated it to the National Register of Historic Places as a nationally significant site. Few sites come out of Minnesota from the Historic Preservation Office argued for at the national level. This was one, and the keeper of the National Register accepted it last July. So it's the first lock and dam on a system today that now has 29 locks and dams on the upper Mississippi. Also, it's tied to the evolution of hydropower in America in the early 20th century. This lock and dam was destroyed because hydropower came of age between the time it was authorized and the time it was completed, and it led to the building of Lock and Dam 1 as a high dam, which meant they had to get rid of this dam. So from this site, you can interpret the history of hydroelectric power in America he can interpret the history of navigation on the Mississippi, and you can interpret local stories like the rivalry between Minneapolis and St. Paul. And this is a wonderful place to do it. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Jack Maloney. I'm a member of the Denoyer Park Improvement Association, which is a neighborhood association. We're a very small neighborhood. Minneapolis is our next-door neighbor. We're almost Minneapolitans, but not quite. The Meeker Island Lock and Dam actually is divided by the city and county line between Minneapolis, St. Paul, Hennepin, and Ramsey counties, and half of this site actually belongs in Representative Kahn's district, and she's well familiar with it. It's a magnificent site, not only because it's historic, but also because it's spectacularly beautiful. It's one of the finest views of the Mississippi in the metro area. We have wild turkey down there. We have beaver down there. We have a lot of waterfowl. It's a wonderful natural area. The only problem is you can't get there from here. There is no safe access to the Meeker Island Lock and Dam, to this historic site, and to this magnificent natural resource right now. What we are asking for in the bonding proposal is funding to bring back or restore the original wagon road that serviced the lock, half of which has crumbled, so that it can become a pedestrian and bicycle access for the public to the lock and dam site. Right now, our neighborhood is virtually cut off from this site by 100 years of neglect on the river bluff. The city of St. Paul has helped us. We were given $15,000 to develop a master plan. There's $30,000 in CIB funding waiting to be spent for engineering on restoration of the wagon road. We've had tremendous support from community organizations throughout the metro area and across the state. We're very proud to have been selected by the Minnesota Environmental Partnership as one of their projects. That's an organization that includes 80 environmental and conservation organizations, including Audubon Society, Isaac Walton League, of which I'm a member, League of Women Voters, many other fine organizations. We feel that it's a very valuable resource, both educational, recreational resource, and unfortunately right now, no one can get to it unless they're willing to scramble down a pretty dangerous bluff. So we ask for your support to restore one of Minnesota's real historic treasures to the public. That's all I have to say. I believe so, and the overheads show some early views of the lock and dam, early and contemporary, I guess. It's a very different site from what it was 100 years ago, and we'd like people to be able to enjoy it. So we're open for questions if you have any.
The only question, I'm still trying to locate my, is where this is at.
Oh, okay, there's a map at the back of the handout. It's right in the center of the metro area, on the line between Minneapolis and St. Paul, on the Mississippi River. If you're familiar with the Twin Cities, it's north of the Lake Street Bridge, south of the Franklin Avenue Bridge. You can actually see it from the Lake Street Bridge.
Mr. Chair, if I could, we in St. Paul call it the Marshall Avenue Bridge, not the Lake Street Bridge. And the so-called rivalry that was between Minneapolis, I'm sure the representatives of Minneapolis and I don't have any idea what they're talking about. There's no such rivalry. We won.
Okay, well, that helps me to clarify.
Does that help you in terms of locating?
It does, because we've been down to the on the Minneapolis side there. You can get down on the shoreline there.
Yes.
At the row club, I believe. So
yes, we're right just upstream from the rowing club.
From the rowing club.
You're on the other side of the other
river,
side of the bank.
Across the river. For the
yep. On the St. Paul side.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
Oh, House File 636 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Bonnie proposal. Next, we have House File 1068, Representative Chesky. I'll move the House File 1068 be considered for possible inclusion in the Bonnie proposal. Representative Leshensky, I believe that there's an amendment that you want.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. I am profoundly grateful that you have clicked through this agenda. It means a lot. Thank you for hearing this bill and the patience of the committee. It's a long morning. The amendment is being handed out. The bill that's being heard now was actually a bill I introduced last year, and we have found more information and the costs are higher than we anticipated. So the amendment gets us from $300,000 to $900,000, Mr. Chair.
Get the bill into the form that the author would like. We'd move House Amendment H1068A1. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Bill is amended.
Thank you, Chairman Osmond and members. The proposal work here for today is the Old Cedar Avenue Bridge. It is owned by Bloomington, yet I want to emphasize that this is a regional bridge. It is part of the Minnesota Valley State Trail System, which is 75 miles long, and this bridge is critical to that trail system. This bridge was used by bikers, hikers, birders, commuters, after MnDOT gave Bloomington the bridge. It basically forced Bloomington to take ownership. Bloomington didn't want the bridge, quite frankly, because it was unsafe. And yet in 1980, the city was made to take ownership of the bridge. It has become unsafe to the point that not only was it close to cars in 1993, you can see a picture of it here, but it has now been closed to even bikes or pedestrians in Arizona. And finding out how unsafe it was happened when MnDOT wanted to paint the new Cedar Bridge. It was going to use this old Cedar Bridge to stage its equipment and found it couldn't even sustain that. So this bridge has now become structurally unsafe to the point that we don't let people walk across it due to liability reasons. So it is also an environmental hazard in the sense that it is covered with lead paint. And so we are now trying to come to you for assistance in removal of the bridge and ultimately for construction of the new bridge, which is critical to the trail that is Fort Snelling to Lisieux, about 75 miles, which was functional until we had to close this bridge down. So that's what we're here on, and Mr. Chair has two testifiers as well. And they can introduce themselves if it's the will of the committee to take their testimony now.
You have additional testimony you'd like to present?
Yes, please.
Please, Chair. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Charles Chose. My last name is spelled K-J-O-S. And I'm here speaking as a citizen who uses the area. I'll describe it as it functioned when the bridge was there. It was a trail hub. It brought together six access trails. One was the bridge trail that was on the new Cedar Avenue Bridge crossing from Egan and Burnsville, and that connected to other trails that brought people. Commuters could use it. On the north, that bridge ended when the old bridge had to be closed. The utility of that bridge was lost, that bridge trail to commuters. The other feeder trails are at the south end of the causeway, where a trail from the east and from the west come together, and on the north side of the bridge, a trail from the east and the west come together, and Old Cedar Avenue comes down. So it's a hub to the joining of six trails. That's one of the important points. It's a trail hub. Secondly, it passes through an area of extreme wildlife beauty and importance to the state. It's one that listed as one of the 20 top birding spots in the state by the Minnesota Audubon Society. It's on their state birding trail. And the Minnesota ornithologists, when the bridge was there, several times a week would be posting rare bird alerts and other bird sightings because it was such an important area that people came and birded it very actively. The third factor that comes together to make this important is the elevated causeway and bridge itself, which just showcases the stunning wetlands and allows people to get close to and view from above the wildlife, the birds, and the beauty of the area. These three things coming together have resulted in there being a constant trickle of traffic across the bridge during the daylight hours. There's a good parking lot. There are always cars there. It's an area that's used by educational classes in college and public schools, birders, nature photographers, families, old people with walkers and oxygen bottles, handicapped people with wheelchairs are there with their friends pushing them. It's just an extraordinary area, and the utility and use of that area depends utterly on the replacement of this bridge. Thank you very much.
Good morning. I'm Jim Gates with the City of Bloomington, Deputy Director of Public Works. As Ann and Chuck have stated, this is a critical link for the trail, but the bridge itself has reached its design life and then some. It was built in 1920, the basic structure is in dire need of repair. But without that critical link being the bridge, we're lacking. We've had to close it, as Ann said, to all vehicles as well as pedestrians because of the structural integrity of the bridge. So we're here to request your support of the bond.
That's too bad that the bridge has really deteriorated that much.
You can put your fist through some of the girders.
Oh.
There's just not much left.
Those girders used to knock off the mirrors on the car.
That's
it. I've been across that bridge many, many times.
Well, Mr. Chair, I know you have, because I know which part of the state you're from. And remember, this used to be the major Minnesota highway to get across the river. And when I was a little girl in Bloomington, we'd go down there to check the flood level to see if the bridge was underwater in the spring. It is now almost inconceivable that this was a major way we got across the Minnesota River, but it was. And that beautiful New Cedar Bridge was needed. But this is the commuter trail for bikers in DeKalb County and Hennepin County, and for people moving back and forth. There's nowhere to go if you're on a bike anymore. So effectively, it really hurts lots of people around the state who are using bikes to get to work.
There is a PED connection across the New Cedar Bridge, but once you get beyond the bridge, then this critical link is the one that is missed.
The dollar amounts that you're looking for now are just to remove the structure?
It is, Mr. Chair, and the reason for that, is, I know it seems like a high amount, is because there is so much lead paint that the removal of the bridge cannot be done like a regular bridge where you break it up, knock it into the water, and take it out of the water. Because of its lead, it has to be sort of a sealed process and removed piece by piece.
Will they be able to use the supporting structures underneath it or anything, or how will the new bridge look?
Mr. Chair, this was designed for a highway bridge. We're envisioning that the piers and the abutments can be reused for a 5-ton bridge, a much lighter design, but still allow maintenance access for the number of utilities that are down there as well as MnDOT.
So the new bridge is going in, won't have to have disturbance of the riverbed?
We hope not, but we haven't done an underwater survey of the existing pier.
President Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, the bill reads kind of differently than the testimony. The bill is saying authorizing state funds to maintain the old Cedar Avenue bridge for hunters and bikers.
They have an amendment A1.
I'm sorry. Okay, that was...
And that removes maintain and puts in remove.
Oh, okay. All right.
And then also inserts words in preparation for. So it,
okay. You also, I guess, you want to maintain the title, amend the title also. So.
And it up the price just a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
You're very welcome. House File 1068 will be recommended to be laid over for possible inclusion in the bonding proposal. That gets us to the end of our agenda. And I really appreciate the patience of members. It was important for us to try and get through this today, because otherwise we're going to get really backlogged They keep telling us we have a timeline, but they haven't told us what it is yet, so we're anticipating the worst. We are adjourned.